To me, that's absolute nonsense. Considering what Congress is doing with us, what backlash could they do that would be worse than what they're doing now? And if it really accepts the Policy Review Commission findings, and if those findings are legitimate, then the UN work will push Congress further into accepting the Policy Review Commission's findings. I can't see how it could cause a backlash. What would Congress do? Would they punish us for being in the UN by saying, passing an act that says you can't be in the UN? Or what would they do? It doesn't make any sense. But what I got later, not from the directors of that foundation, but from somebody else who talked to one of their other people, was that they thought that there was a possibility of us being used by the Soviet Union or something like that, which is another way of saying we're so simple-minded that we don't know when we're being used. We're not really that simple-minded. We've been trying to get the Soviet Union to use us a little bit to get us. They're not very interested, because they're doing the same thing to their people that the U.S. is doing to us. They're not supporting us.
What is your
I think primarily from the Human Rights Commission of the UN and from organizations around the UN, like the Organization of African Unity, putting some political embarrassment in the UN by making a speech in the General Assembly or something. That kind of pressure in the U.S. and the Organization of Non-Aligned States at some future date. We have as a goal in the next 3 years to get before the UN Committee on Decolonization. But that will be more of a publicity thing. Because what that committee does is decide whether or not you are colonized. And if you are colonized, according to UN rules, you have to be independent. The UN has to work for your independence, according to its own rules. And the UN might pass a resolution like that at some long future date, but not at the present. And if it did, so what? The U.S. wouldn't do anything. The U.S. wouldn't give us independence just because the UN said so. But the UN wouldn't say so anyway. I don't think that we're even looking for that kind of independence. I don't think that we're really talking about 260 distinct, separate, isolated nations within the U.S. Because it's not a practical thing. And it's what we're trying to do is to get on an equal basis with the U.S. and to deal with the U.S. and the U.S. people honestly, not isolate ourselves. And if we suddenly got status as totally independent nations, then I think we're asking for trouble that we don't want. But I think we can, in the next 10 years or 20 years, that we can form a confederacy like the Iroquois Confederacy of as many Indian nations that want to be in that confederacy from the Treaty Council and get the kind of sovereignty that would guarantee our land without some state or the federal government taking half of our land every year without the BIA having total control of our lives and that sort of thing, to give us sovereignty, which is the same thing as nationhood. But it's not the same thing in that you don't have to have your own mint, you don't have to have soldiers guarding the borders, you don't have to have a pass to get from one side of the river into U.S. country.
Does the American Indian Association in New York back you?
We haven't talked with them much. Alfonso Ortiz is backs us, but I don't know what he does with the association. Our only contact with them is through Mary Lou Byler, which is a personal contact between her and I. We work in other projects. But I think the association as a whole is probably a little bit confused about what to do. Because I think it's a new thing. The whole struggle is new. It's not new to us. What the phenomena of the Treaty Council itself is that its governing board is the traditional chiefs and leaders, the traditional elders. And this is the first time that those people who are the real Indian leaders in the Indian community have had a visible organization where they could articulate their ideas. So they're articulating through the council the same ideas that they've always been talking about for the last 200 years, especially all of the century. But it hasn't been heard because they haven't been, they've been out of power in their tribal governments. They haven't had the money to set up an office before at the UN or anything like that. So their voices haven't been heard in the general U.S. public. Now that it is being heard, of course it sounds like a new thing. But those guys, I know Oren and other people, other chiefs of the Iroquois Confederacy, have gone to the UN year after year, almost every year, and talked about it. And the Lakota have talked about it, the Hopi have talked about going to the UN. And even before that, actually went to the League of Nations in 1925 to protest the Citizenship Act. And the Navajo protested to the League of Nations, the Iroquois Confederacy did, the Hopi did. The Lakota would have if they hadn't been so isolated that they didn't know about it. So the whole thrust of working in the UN for us has been there ever since there's been a UN. But we didn't have the resources, and we've got a thing that I think is a weakness that I hope we don't get rid of, in that our traditional leaders, and even the new tribal councils. This is the way we've always worked with the U.S., and it's the way we work internationally, too. We assume that other body, the U.S. or U.N., whatever, operates with the integrity that we work with, that our chiefs have. And of course, they don't. And we know that our chiefs know that the U.S. doesn't have the integrity as a government that our government has. But knowing that intellectually and being able to deal with that, because our whole concept of nationhood, of peoplehood, rests on the ability to act with total integrity as a people. That's your first proof that you're a people, if you can act as a people with integrity. And of course, the U.S. can't do that because Congress is not an organization with integrity. The presidency these days is certainly not an organization with integrity. And the U.N. is a bunch of nations that hate each other, trying to work together, so they don't have that kind of integrity. So these chiefs go to the front gate of the U.N. last year, 73, 72, in the 60s, the 50s, the 40s. Chiefs went to the UN the first year there was a UN. And they go up to the front gate and they present our position. And they say, these are the problems we're having. This is what we want you to do about it. Assuming that the UN will operate with integrity. And instead, the UN says, sorry, come back next year. Because they're not strictly towards justice. They're towards all these political maneuvers. So that's kept us out of the UN thing. The inability to do all of this political wheeling and dealing. And yet at the same time, that's our greatness as a people, that we don't get into that kind of thing. Now I do get into it. I'm the best wheeler dealer around the UN. I'm like Kissinger at the UN. It's the same thing that Ernie Stevens and people like that have been doing in Washington for years.
Kind of frustrating.
But I think the whole, the international thrust is primarily to get the U.S. and other countries to deal with us on a more equal basis, and to deal with us fairly through international pressure, international embarrassment that can happen. But secondarily, which may be more important in the long run, is just the process of us getting back into the world community, because we were part of the world community as we knew it before Columbus came, much more so than European countries were. The Choctaw traders before Columbus went all the way down into South America, all the way up to Canada, and other trading nations did the same thing. And we talked to the world as we knew it. And I think that's part of being a people, the ability to be in the world, in the world community. Since we've been within the U.S. and the other countries, and we're stuck on reservations, and we're considered strictly the internal affairs of each of those countries in the Americas, it puts us in the position of almost of not being real people, because we're no longer part of the world. We're the U.S. Indians, or we're the Brazilian Indians, or something like that. And I think if we someday get some sort of a voice in the UN as Indian people, it won't hurt the people of the U.S. It's no threat to the U.S. It's no threat to Brazil, except that it makes the Brazilian government quit killing Indians. But it's no threat to the Spanish people of Brazil, the Portuguese people of Brazil.
Keep some of them getting rich.
Yeah. And finally, we've got a lot of visions, our elders say, that the world needs to be hearing about today in places like the international community as a whole. And there's not anybody else saying those things that we would be saying. So I think it's important for us, and I think it's important for the world, finally, for there to be some sort of Indian voice in the UN, or whatever comes after the UN.
You certainly can't say that there's integrity and unity among Indians if you include all that might be included, but within your own organization, would you say that there is unity? Aren't there divergence of interests?
I think there's a great deal of unity. There's not the unity in the sense of one people, because the Lakota, the Siletz, the Cherokee, the Iroquois come into it as distinct people, not as Indians, but as Cherokee or Siletz or whatever.
Are you thinking about traditional people or the non-traditional?
I'm thinking about his organization primarily. If you take everybody you might call Indian, then they have all kinds of viewpoints. But you're speaking for the American Treaty.
Well, I was speaking of traditional Indian societies. That's what I was talking about. I don't mean traditional in the sense of what we did 400 years ago.
No.
Some of us did
Darn
some pretty crazy things. But what I think a lot of people don't realize is that a traditional Indian culture, say the Lakota culture, the Lakota ways, are not exactly the same as they were 400 years ago, and they don't want them to be. What is the same is the basic vision of how human beings live in the world and in society. And that's the same. The exterior things, like this kind of beadwork or riding horses or making arrows, that a lot of people take for our culture, these are just the shell of the culture. And the real culture is the base of that, which is human beings living in the world. And I think that's what we have to offer to everybody else. Not how to do beadwork, and not how to be Indian.
Where has this been best expressed?
In what book?
Well, where can we best read about it or present it to other people? Where has it been best articulated?
From the Treaty Council itself.
In other words, is it in print, or if I can get a tape where that has been stated? I've heard Erwin Lyons say this sort of thing, and I've got my tape recorder out, and he told me to put it away. He said, listen, attention. I'll tell you, but he wants to have it on paper.
We don't have anything like that, primarily because we haven't had the money to do that. But we sneaked up on a lot of those guys and got them in tape anyway, a lot of those others, especially at the first treaty conference.
Well, as you say, that's what your message to the world is, and I'd like to see it help spread it.
Yeah, I think I would like to see, if not a book, at least a booklet, just explaining, in the words of our chiefs and elders, what we're looking for. Because I think there's something really incredible about what we're doing. We're on any reservation in the States today, almost more than 70% of the people suffer from malnutrition and live in desperate poverty. And there's a lot of different things going on. There's the American Indian movement, there's warrior societies, and there's this and there's that and the other. But when you go out and talk to those guys, those old women elders, you don't hear them complaining about those things. You hear them talking about this is the way the world really ought to be, and this is the way human beings in the world ought to be. And this is what I learned from that ego yesterday. Not complaining about, damn it, I don't have any water in my house, but instead putting out a very positive vision of what they're really looking for. Which to a lot of people in the past has made us look romantic or simple-minded, because we're living in destitution, and we don't see that as the primary problem. We see that as a secondary symptom.
Read this pathos that Coach
DuBois
at Princeton said,
gee,
when I was little, I didn't even know I was poor.
Right, I didn't felt the same way.
There was a Congress for World Unity that met out at Valley Forge during the summer, and they asked me to attend to give the message of Dejan Nawida. I don't know why, who phrased all this and thought that I ought to come out and say this, but I tried to do it, and I don't think I did too badly, but I'd like to hear you say it, or I'd like to get it really from somebody who could authentically say it. I'd have you try to.
Yeah, I would rather elders spoke about it.
Well, I'll get it in the tape or see it printed.
Yeah, that's what I'd like to do, is print a lot of this stuff.
If we can have it for Indian Truth, we'd just welcome it.
Maybe we can get at least some of the tapes transferred. We've got a closet full of tapes that have never been transferred. Mm-hmm. And some of them are now up at Akwesasne.
Well, tell me if I could buy it from Akwesasne, if you say which one you'd recommend to us. I'd very much like to. We could do the transcribing if we could buy the tape.
I'll look through what we've got at the office.
Are you a tax exempt organization?
Yeah. As the information center.
As the information center. Have you tried Fault Stokes Foundation?
Virgil Kilstreet talked to them for us a year ago. but then he got back busy with the school coalition. So I don't know whatever came of it. I talked to their guy in Washington, that Indian guy, 3 years ago.
Rose Robinson just started working for Members. Yeah.
She's a good friend.
Well, I just saw her in Salt Lake City. She said she just started working for Phelps Hooks 2 weeks ago.
I wish she would go back and start AIPA again. Mm-hmm. She was the only one who could do that.
Yeah. They went broke too, I think.
Well, they folded up when Rose left. That's what happened. As soon as she left, infighting started in there. Trying to take over.
The small fund right in this building.
Page Baker.
Page Baker.
He's probably gone.
Muriel Boris knows Pete Dyer. Do you know Pete Dyer? Pete Dyer is a very good friend of the Lilly drug company, Eris, who's very interested in the affairs.
Dara Stuchin living in New York City.
I think she is.
Is she?
Mm-hmm.
She certainly funded quite a few of these things.
Well, she said she wouldn't do it anymore after, what's his name, ran off of the cattle.
Who ran off?
Cato Valandra.
Cato Valandra.
There's a small fund right in this building, the Chase Fund. Indians is one of the interests of the woman who made the request. We touch them for money every now and then, mostly for pleasure interests, but it might be that the Indian Committee of the yearly meeting might request in your behalf. I don't know. We have a request before them right at the moment for National Council of Churches, Miller Cordo, and we'll see what they do. If they do anything for that, then we might have a precedent that they might do it for this, too. I don't know.
Only legal papers, that's all. We've got a stack of different legal studies in there, but not a general thing.
There's one about sovereignty. We have the transfer to the second National Treaty Council in office, which everyone should probably know about.
Yeah. The founding conference in 74, June of 74, was sponsored by AIM and the Standing Rock Tribal Council. And, well, AIM is in a very funny position right now. There's a bunch of people who call AIM, but there's no longer an organization called AIM. No organization that you can put your finger on.
You have to sit for a second.
We crouched on their time.
Yeah.
It's all right. I'm not going to be crouching on
their time.
He said
I had to take him away.
We owe him to you now. We.
Anyway, let me finish about AIM, because I think it's an important thing. The part of the AIM leadership that works with the council and supports the council is the AIM leadership from reservations. And the part that kind of indifferent to us is the AIM leadership that's from cities. And I think the obvious reason is that our support is from the traditional people. On the reservation. And if you grow up in a city without talking to your people, it's very hard to know what is going on with something like the Treaty Council, what people, chiefs and elders and traditional people, are talking about when they talk about treaties and sovereignties. Because it's not your problem in the city. Your problem in the city is finding a place to live, getting a job, trying to stay out of jail, trying to stay off booze and so on. So that's basically the way it's come down. But things have come down so heavy on AIM in the past year. They're just really disorganized. Not anything of their own fault, just certain forces inside the FBI and certain forces in South Dakota are trying to destroy the American Indian. So they're in serious straits right now. So, thanks for meeting.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. I'm going to get some.